John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.immc.org, for Tuesday, March 27, 2012. Three Palestinians are injured and five are arrested in Israeli soldiers and settler attacks in different parts of the West Bank. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Palestinian detainee on hunger strike, Hanaa Shalabi, entered her 41st day of hunger strike today. She is protesting administrative detention and ill-treatment by her Israeli captives. So far, 50 prisoners have joined her protest and went on hunger strike. Her lawyers today warned that her health is reaching critical levels. Political prisoners announced that they will escalate their protest in April, with 4,500 political detainees planning a general hunger strike and boycotting the military court system. Meanwhile, Israeli attacks left three Palestinian civilians injured on Tuesday. An 18-year-old boy was shot in his leg by a fundamentalist Israeli settler in the old city of Hebron in southern part of the West Bank. The sources added that Muhammad Hisham Abu Akir, 18 years old, was admitted to surgery after being shot by a live round in his right foot. His condition was described as moderate due to significant blood loss resulting from the injury. Earlier on Tuesday, three brothers were wounded during an Israeli military invasion into Romanim village near the central West Bank city of Ramallah. One soldier was wounded during the invasion after being stabbed in his back, Israeli sources reported. The army claimed that the soldier opened fire at the three brothers after the soldier was stabbed. The three men were identified as Rashad, Akram, and Anwar Dhib, one of whom is in serious condition. In other news, soldiers abducted three Palestinians in the Hebron district and two from Hussan village near Bethlehem during pre-dawn invasions targeting communities in the West Bank. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Tuesday, March 27th Daily News Roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. Join us again tomorrow for more news and updates. Please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Hussam Kassis and me, Kassam Bannoura.
Fuck!
Afghanistan yesterday. Afghan security forces shot and killed 3 international troops, one of them an American, in 2 attacks. The other 2 may have been British. There is speculation that this attack is vengeance for the murder of 17 Afghan civilians March 11th by Robert Bates and any co-conspirators he may have had. This sort of thing has been happening since the Russian war, but a lot more since U.S. forces burned the Quran at Bagram Air Base. Afghanistan, Sunday. 1 U.S. soldier, 6 Afghan soldiers, and a translator were killed by a bomb in Kandahar province. They were approaching the device in order to defuse it when it exploded. It may have been remotely detonated. Afghanistan, Saturday. NATO is reporting the death of a soldier of unspecified nationality from an IED blast in an undisclosed location in southern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, Saturday. The Italian military is reporting the death of an Italian soldier from an indirect weapons or mortar attack at forward operating base ICE, Gulistan, Para Province, Afghanistan. 5 additional soldiers were wounded in the attack. Afghanistan, yesterday, a suicide bomber using a bomb vest blew himself up against a convoy of NATO-led forces in Chora district of Uruzgan province, 370 kilometers south of Kabul. The blast injured 4 people, including 3 foreign soldiers, according to local police. Afghanistan, today. There was a major explosion in eastern Nangarhar province at about 10 a.m. local time, while counter-narcotics cops were in the area. At least 6 Afghan government soldiers were killed, plus 1 other person reported as a civilian, unknown if he was a narc. There were unconfirmed reports that Afghan security forces then opened fire, wounding several civilians in the area. Afghanistan, Sunday, NATO reported a hard landing by one of their aircraft. This can mean anything from too fast to set down to a minor crash. Was the aircraft damaged by ground fire? NATO isn't saying. Iraq, ongoing. Reuters reporter Sudad al-Sali is reporting that al-Qaeda in Iraq is strong in Mosul, and everything looks like it did back in 2006 to 2007. Mr. Barack Obama, over 8 years of U.S. occupation of Iraq did not stop the fighting, and al-Qaeda in Iraq did not exist until after U.S. troops invaded. Afghanistan is even more unconquerable than Iraq. Now is the time to pull the plug, bring all the troops home today.
The most recent flashpoint for violence in Afghanistan came after U.S. Army Staff Sergeant Robert Bales allegedly shot and killed 9 children, 4 men and 3 women, all civilians, on March 11th in 2 villages near his army base in Kandahar province. The shootings followed violent protests provoked by the late February burning of copies of the Quran and other Islamic religious material by U.S. military personnel at America's Bagram Air Base. Earlier, a video showing 4 U.S. Marines urinating on 3 slain Taliban fighters had provoked angry demonstrations. Together, these incidents have generated outrage on the part of many ordinary Afghan citizens, stoking resentment of what many there believe to be more than 10 years of oppressive U.S. occupation. One indicator of that resentment is the fact that of the 60 coalition troops who have died in Afghanistan since January, 13 have been killed by members of the U.S. allied Afghan security forces. The Obama administration's current plan calls for the withdrawal of 23,000 U.S. troops by the end of September and a complete withdrawal by December 2014, when Afghan forces are expected to take charge of the country's security. Your reporter spoke with Kathy Kelly, co-coordinator of Voices for Creative Nonviolence. Kelly describes the suffering she witnessed during a recent fact-finding trip to Afghanistan and explains why she advocates a rapid withdrawal of American forces from that war-ravaged nation.
Because of the war, many people are displaced. displaced, and they have nowhere to go. There are 400 new refugees every day arriving in cities like Kabul. And so you've got huge, sprawling refugee camps where in the extremely cold winter, it's the harshest winter on record in Afghanistan since anybody's ever been, you know, measuring temperatures. In this extreme cold, people who don't have income, they don't have jobs, they can't afford to buy lumber so that they could light a fire, so that they could have some source of heat in the very makeshift mud huts that people construct for themselves. And so just in the time since January 1st, in the one refugee camp that I visited most often, 8 children froze to death. And since January 1st, in Afghanistan, 26 children froze to death, 40 people, all told, have frozen to death. Now, how could children freeze to death? Well, it's because, you know, the parents might try to huddle everybody underneath blankets, but an infant can roll out from under the blanket, and the parents awake in the morning horrified and realize that their child has frozen to death. And in one family that I've gotten to know, the uncle of the family walked over to a 9-year-old girl. I was kind of huddled next to her to stay warm, really. And he unzipped the top of her jacket and pulled it back so that I would see there was no arm in the sleeve, because a drone attack had ripped off this young 9-year-old girl's arm. And next to her, her brother was just writhing in pain, and the same drone attack had mangled his leg. And then I read in the New York Times after I returned that their 8-month-old infant was among the children, the babies who'd frozen to death. So this is a family that's emblematic of intense, searing, horrible pain. And so many families have been affected. I talked to young Fazila, and now she's a widow, and she has a 5-year-old child, I know, to try to raise without a breadwinner, because her husband and 4 of his friends were sitting in a garden and a drone attacked them and killed all 5. And her mother-in-law is so angry. She says, they don't ask any questions. Who was this? Who was that? There's no evidence. Just they have some doubt or some suspicion. Right now, the United States is trying very hard to force Afghanistan's government to sign a strategic partnership agreement. And this would allow United States troops to remain in the country perhaps as long as 2024 or longer. And for young people in Afghanistan, I mean, I want to remind us all that the average life expectancy for women is 42.2 years of age. For men, it's 42.6 years of age. And 250 children die every day of starvation. 850 children die every day. So what can people expect who are young? 65% of Afghanistan's population are under 25 years of age. What can they expect for their future if the United States troops are going to stay there for another decade? Because the Taliban have made it very clear they'll never accept that. And they've broken off negotiations with the United States quite recently. And when the United States tries to say that the massacre of 16 people by a soldier who'd gone berserk is unusual, it's an aberration, that's not true. I mean, February 4th of just last month, a United States Combat Brigade unit helicopter executed, shot down 4 civilians who were shepherds on a mountainside. And on March 1st, 8 children were executed because they were trying to graze their flocks on a mountainside. And this kind of thing happens routinely. The United States soldiers break into homes, and if anybody puts up any slight resistance, they can immediately be shot to death. So it's just not true to think that that was an extraordinary circumstance. People in Afghanistan have been bearing night raids and aerial bombardments and drone attacks almost as a norm throughout these horrible years of United States invasion and occupation.
Kathy, what do you make of the Obama administration's plan to withdraw troops from Afghanistan? There are 91,000 U.S. troops there now. There are 23,000 that are scheduled to be withdrawn by September and the rest by 2014. But as you mentioned earlier, there are negotiations right now over something called the U.S.-Afghanistan Strategic Partnership Agreement that would extend the U.S. presence beyond 2014. Maybe you can explain the nuance of that and what it really means in terms of the war going on well beyond 2014.
I don't think we should fool ourselves into thinking that although President Obama might say something that's popular during an election year about withdrawing the forces from Afghanistan, that in fact we're going to see an end to United States warfare in Afghanistan. That's why it's so important for people to debate and discuss this strategic partnership agreement. And it hasn't been debated in the U.S. media. It has certainly not been debated in the U.S. Congress. But this will have a tremendous impact on security for Afghanistan, for the region, and in some ways for the United States, because if we keep attacking innocent civilians in faraway lands, someday someone's going to say, hey, if you can attack us with your remote-controlled aircraft, we can attack you within your borders.
That was Kathy Kelly, co-coordinator of Voices for Creative Nonviolence. Learn more about her group's work in Afghanistan by visiting our website at btlonline.org.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to wsqtradio@hushmail.com. Repeat, wsqtradio@hushmail.com. Montgomery County, Maryland, county politicians want to fund a new bus rapid transit program using a massive increase in property taxes. The Washington Post printed an estimate that most homeowners would pay $800 to $2,000 in extra taxes for this program. The recent Washington Post story did not specify the alignment for the project, but it is probably a long-proposed Corridor City's transit way parallel to I-270, which developers want so they can continue development north towards Frederick. Property taxes punish the elderly and longtime homeowners whose incomes bear no relation to what upscale newcomers are bidding for houses in their neighborhoods, and in fact are often a driving element of gentrification. I can't imagine a more effective way for politicians to divide drivers from those who ride the bus than to threaten to turn people out of their homes unless they can afford to pay not only what the yuppies pay in property taxes, but an additional $800 to $2,000. Gas taxes and income taxes are being considered off the table. Only property taxes are being considered. If it were a problem of state law, Annapolis usually passes any bills affecting only one county and proposed by that county without much debate. Meanwhile, D.C. Mayor Gray's budget for next year includes plans to raise $30 million by installing speed cameras at existing red light cameras so motorists who try to stop and can't get tickets, and so do motorists who speed up trying to avoid a red light ticket. The same proposal went nowhere last year. Wonder if its real objective is to drum up support for cutting $30 million somewhere else, like homeless shelters or libraries. The Montgomery County bus transit proposal might also not even be intended to pass, but instead to pit the middle class against the poor and artificially create demand for budget and service cuts. This may also be true of the entire D.C. budget plan to balance the budget with fees and fines instead of taxes on the wealthy. What is going on when two neighboring jurisdictions simultaneously propose budgets designed to divide the poor from the middle class? Is someone desperately trying to break up what Occupy protesters call the 99%? I don't know what those politicians in Montgomery County and the D.C. City Council are smoking, but I do not want to hit on it. And here's hoping it goes out real soon before it can achieve its probable goal of dividing the poor from the middle class. Let's just say that the D.C. City Council and the Montgomery County Council are not all they've cracked up to be. On the 24th of March, one speaker at a massive Justice for Trayvon Martin rally in front of the district building called for boycotting corporations like Walmart that give money to the American Legislative Exchange Council the author of the Stand Your Ground law in Florida.
This is for Trayvon. My brothers and sisters, we got to read, we've got to understand, we've got to connect the dots, and we've got to know that corporate America has something to do with what is happening now in terms of telling us that this man will never go to jail. There is an organization called the Organization of Leadership Exchange Council, and every day we go to stores and we buy products that help to finance them. They are the ones who did the law in Florida that says Zimmerman may not go to jail, but we know better. But we've got to check out what Walmart is contributing to.
Yep.
We got to check out what British Petroleum is contributing
yep.
to.
All right.
They're all over our communities, so we're spending our money there every day. We let it bypass that our brothers and sisters in the Gulf were damaged and never paid.
All right.
We got to stop doing it. People understand when you stop buying from them, they don't have the money to give to that legislative exchange council that puts out laws in every state that are against us. The same ones that made that Stand Your Ground law, those are the same companies that are doing other things to us. They're the same ones that are financing the opportunity to suppress our vote all across this country. Check out the names. Coca-Cola is on the list. Walgreens is on the list. I'm calling them out. There's a whole bunch more that's on that list. You know the Koch brothers are on that list. You know all kinds of companies that the State Farm that you do business with, they're all on the list. They are giving grants to this Legislative Exchange Council. They are giving money to sponsor their meetings that they have to decide what happens to you, my brothers and sisters, and they are suppressing our vote. We've got to say enough is enough. This shall end. Enough is enough. Enough is enough.
You mentioned in the state of Florida where they have a law that if you even think that you're threatening to me, I can pull out a gun and shoot him. Now, what do you think would have happened if Trayvon would have felt threatened?
That raises a very interesting point, and that is, if the Stand Your Ground law had not been meant to be read in a racist manner, if it was meant to be race neutral, Zimmerman, who was the attacker, would not have been able to claim self-defense, would not have been able to claim Florida's castle law or Stand Your Ground law. It would have been Trayvon who would have been able to claim it, since he was the one being attacked and pursued through the streets. Of course, we all know that if Trayvon had pulled a gun of his own and shot George Zimmerman dead, no way would the police have believed a claim of self-defense from a young African-American male. He would have been arrested. He'd be sitting in jail awaiting charges on murder for defending his own life. And that's the problem with Stand Your Ground laws. Only white people are allowed to use them, it seems. And to all you listeners out there, every time you shop at Walmart, every time you do business with a corporation that gives money to ALEC, you're helping to kill the next Trayvon Martin or the next person killed in the name of these Stand Your Ground laws. On the 26th of March, protesters gathered outside the offices of U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder. 500,000 signed petitions demanding the arrest of George Zimmerman for the murder of Trayvon Martin were delivered to Attorney General Eric Holder. And outside, the new Black Panther Party announced, not for the first time, a $10,000 bounty for the capture and arrest of George Zimmerman, wanted for the murder of Trayvon Martin in Florida. Since the police have refused to arrest Trayvon Martin for this murder, the new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense has decided that the black community is just going to have to take care of business in-house.
Your word is mine, okay, you're right. Just show your face, brought in.
And the wanted poster out for him, and we have put together with the church community, with the mosque community, with all those in entertainment that support us. And what we have done is placed a $10,000 reward, and it's building as I speak, for the capture and the return and the arrest of George Zimmerman.
Yeah.
As the evidence is building, there seems to be, Brother Shagor Bay, a preponderance of
evidence. You hear that, bounty hunters? You got a job to do.
A premeditated murder, because there's 911 calls. There's nearly 50. Yeah. This man, George Zimmerman, placed nearly 50 911 calls. And in the latter of this year, all of those calls were done on the black community. And somebody's black, and somebody's suspicious somewhere. And he has declared that this man has to be a criminal. And he's attached that label to the black youth. But my question is, can the black youth today, can we deliver a death blow to Willie Lynch Syndrome?
Yes.
And George Zimmerman.
Yes.
We want to know, are we willing to go out and capture George Zimmerman?
Yes.
And bring
yes.
him to justice?
Yes.
Because if there's a reason, we do have a reasonable suspicion that there was a felony, there was a fatal felony that was committed on that day. And we know that the family of Tyvon, are looking for justice. So if there's no justice, no peace, so what do you want?
Justice.
What do you want?
Justice.
And when do you want it?
Now.
I'm going to say by any means necessary. What do you want?
Justice.
When do you want it?
Now.
Now tell me how you want it.
What do you need? Justice.
What do you want?
Justice.
And tell me when you want it.
Now.
And tell me how we going to get it.
What do you need? Justice.
Bring him to justice. This man is a wanted man. There's a price on the head of this man. Bring him to justice. Get the black community all over the world to seek out this man. Bring him to justice. For the life of our brother Trayvon Martin. We thank you, we wish you black power and peace and power to the people.
Black power.
And black power.
Black power.
100% of Americans have said that George Zimmerman needs to be arrested. 75% of 75%, so that tells you it's not just a black issue. This is an issue concerning a travesty of justice. And I'm also here because I'm confused today, Minister Medea. I'll tell you why I'm confused today. Because I thought this was America. I thought there was equal justice under the law. But what I'm witnessing here is that we are, the police in Sanford, Florida, are taking at face value a report from one person who said that he acted in self-defense. Where can you go in America in our neighborhood and there's a crime being perpetrated and someone points a finger at us and we can just simply say to the police, oh, it was self-defense, and then they don't arrest us and they don't accuse us? That is injustice. It is injustice in America that a young, innocent black man, his blood has been shed in vain. And if we're going to have equal justice under law, George Zimmerman must be arrested. There is no doubt about it. He must be arrested. 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 He must be arrested.
You heard that, Attorney General Eric Holder. Either have George Zimmerman arrested for violating the civil rights of Trayvon Martin, whom he murdered in Florida, or someone else is gonna do it for you. Last year, on the 30th of November, Occupy Santa Cruz took over 75 River Street, an abandoned bank building leased by Wells Fargo in Santa Cruz, California. Wells Fargo is famous for funding private prisons as well as for predatory lending. When riot police attacked the building, protesters barricaded the building and defeated the assault, forcing the riot cops to withdraw. Unfortunately, the police continued to target and brutalize people out around the occupation to such an extent that the occupiers threw in a towel and abandoned the building 6 days later. Now, 11 people are being charged with 23 felonies stemming from that nonviolent occupation. The only violence or vandalism came from the police, but crusading, Occupy-hating District Attorney Bob Lee wants his pound of flesh. Two of the defendants, Indy Bay journalists Bradley Allen Stewart and Alex DeRossi, are being charged with conspiracy to commit a crime for doing nothing more than providing media coverage of an Occupy protest that was attacked by the police.
A Santa Cruz photojournalist is facing felony and misdemeanor charges arising from his coverage of a building occupation in Santa Cruz last November. Bradley Stewart Allen, a member of the National Press Photographers Association and an indie media contributor, was charged with felony vandalism following his coverage of a three-day building occupation by protesters affiliated with Occupy Wall Street. Late last week, a Santa Cruz judge threw out the vandalism charge after the Photographers Association had filed a brief on Allen's behalf. But the judge found that enough evidence exists to try Allen and co-defendant Alex Darcy on charges of conspiracy and trespass. Speaking with KPFA, Allen read the texts of the charges he now faces.
Count one, a felony, conspiracy to commit a crime in violation of Penal Code Section 182A1. Count two, a felony, felony vandalism in violation of Penal Code Section 594B1. Count three, a misdemeanor, trespass by entering and occupying in violation of Penal Code Section 602M. And count four, a misdemeanor, trespass and refusing to leave private property in violation of Penal Code Section 602O.
Allen said he hopes to have these charges dismissed at his next court appearance on March 29th. He said he has no doubt that the charges are motivated by hostility toward independent media.
I had no idea that there was going to be an occupied building. I covered this occupation as a breaking news event, and the DA, District Attorney Bob Lee, and Rebecca Webb are now arguing that my coverage of the events alone and publishing them on my website and indiebay.org in and of itself was an act to promote trespass, that my coverage alone of a news event was a conspiracy to promote trespass. So they are now criminalizing media. I feel that it is crystal clear that I am being attacked for my political affiliations and media skills.
That is Santa Cruz photojournalist Bradley Stewart Allen, who faces multiple felony and misdemeanor charges for his coverage of an Occupy protest last November. Santa Cruz District Attorney's Office could not be reached for comment on his case.
That was KPFA Berkeley's coverage of District Attorney Bob Lee's efforts to prosecute independent journalists into silence. These folks are being prosecuted for doing what we do here at WSQT Direct Action Radio and DC Indie Media without even going on the air. We, too, cover Occupy. Bob Lee, you stinking piece of pig shit. You listen good and you listen hard. Just as your police agencies are able to find and raid activist homes, so we can find and protest at your home. It gets awful hard to sleep when protesters show up with air horns at all hours of the day and night. Just ask any executive of any corporation that does business with Huntington Life Sciences or any so-called scientist who tortures animals at UC Berkeley. That also goes for any of you other U.S. attorneys or other prosecutors who might get ideas about trying to prosecute independent journalists into silence. At WSQT, we understand that the United States is a nation that bombed Al Jazeera three times because their Iraq coverage was considered objectionable. These pigs couldn't stop Al Jazeera, and they can't stop any of the indie medias either.